Hello, everyone. Thanks so much for listening to Getting Savvy in Health, Wealth, and Beauty. Important to note that everything is for entertainment purposes only. Please do speak and meet with a financial advisor before making any investment decisions. And also, please meet and speak with your GP before making any health or beauty decisions.
Welcome, everybody, to Getting Savvy in Health and Wealth. It is episode 7, Melissa. Are we learning a lot? Have we made money? What are we doing?
Yes.
We have.
Yes, we have. The markets have been up. It's been good for both of us.
That is true. It has been good. We're going to get to that in a second.
Most people invested in the market.
What's that?
And I think most people it's been good for these past few months.
Absolutely. But today, not the same case, not this week. It's been a little bit on the downside. But why don't we start with highlights of the week? Why don't you go first?
Sure. Okay. So what did I do this week? So today I had a training for a specific type of laser used for gynecological purposes. So it's used for people that have incontinence, often women in perimenopause or postmenopausally struggle with this, that they cough or sneeze and they leak some urine, or they just feel the urge and they're going a lot. Also for vaginal rejuvenation. Anyhow, this is what I did today. And so it's actually a laser that's inserted vaginally and it tightens and stimulates and builds collagen in the area. So it was very interesting. So That was today. Yeah. Other than that, just, catching up with some friends. Working this weekend's a big one because obviously Taylor Swift is in Toronto.
Are you going?
Downtown's crazy. No, I'm not going, but my daughter is.
Oh, good.
Win-win.
Yes, a win-win.
Not that I don't want to go. It just seems like that's going to be very busy and I'd prefer to have the night off to relax. So she's going to go. And then Carter will go to the hockey game tomorrow night. Yeah. So how about you? What have you been up to?
That's good. So I'm in a hotel room in Dallas, Texas. Mm-hmm. We were here last night at a really great dinner. Just a bunch of kind of investors and various private equity companies, really interesting companies. And then it's because we're all going to the Tyson fight tonight.
So fun. We're going to be watching that here, but you're in person. I've never been to a boxing match in person or any like MMA fight or anything like that. Have you?
No, never. And I probably, it's only because we've been invited by some great people that we're going, and we're going to be in a box, which I think is going to be really fun. Apparently there's going to be tons of food and, but I was thinking we were going to go on the earlier side. Like I don't know anything about this. And, but apparently there's, I guess, other fights before the main fight.
Yeah. Cause these fights don't always last that long. It can't just be one, boxing match. You could be there for 10 minutes if it's a knockout. I think I don't
know. I know. So it's gonna be
savvy on the world of boxing.
I know. And we're gonna be so I think it's gonna start at 10, but you want to be able to get there to the stadium early. I think. I don't know. Nobody really knows, just FYI. Anyone who's hosting a party tonight, which I think you are, aren't you?
Yeah, we are. We're having people over. Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, we'll be thinking of you. I'll send some pictures. I know. Yeah. So, I've never seen a fight. Hurt. What's that? You hope nobody gets hurt? I know. Right? But I think that anybody gets hurt. Yeah. But I think that's the opposite of what happens when you box. I think there's going to be some damage. I don't know.
Archaic, but
it does seem archaic.
It does. I mean, but for years, like there have been, fencing and fighting. And I guess I feel like it's more of a testosterone driven thing. I don't feel women, anyhow.
Yeah, I know.
It could be interesting.
I might close my eyes, which defeats the whole purpose of flying to Dallas to watch a fight. But anyway,
I've never been to Texas.
It was fantastic.
I hear it's really fun and great. I've never been.
Yeah, it's gorgeous. Dallas is amazing. It's clean up. Like it's, we just went for lunch. It was just great. It's gorgeous. You'll have to come.
For Dallas and Austin. Yeah, I'd like to
visit. Oh, yeah. So a couple of things just in the market right now. So the market is trading lower today, and it has been trading lower all week by about 1 to 2%. So you call this somewhat of a defensive tone to the market. That's kind of the wording that's used. And the reason is because, you know, we've talked about valuations in the past, right, with respect to the stock, but also the broader market. So they're saying valuations are a little bit stretched. Remember last week we talked about the valuation of the S&P 500 being a little bit higher than what it's been historically. So that's what's called being stretched versus the average. You've also got the view right now that there might be a December rate pause. Mm-hmm. That means the U.S. Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell, he spoke yesterday, and he basically gave a slight commentary. They never come out and say we're going to pause, but they give slight commentary that they could pause, that there's not necessarily a need to actually decrease rates once again. So that's causing a little bit of consternation in the market, because remember, lower rates means lower interest rates, lower charges means more profit, means more earnings. And therefore, you know, the stocks are going to perform better when you have more earnings. That's kind of a simple, very simplified way of saying it, but that's why lower rates tend to be better. It also has to do with valuations, but we'll save that one for another day. Then the other reason why there's a defensive tone to the market is because of people now looking at Trump policies a different way, the way you talked about it last week, which is, you know, if you've got more spending and increasing deficits, that's increasing debt, higher tariffs, a pullback in immigration that might lead to higher labor costs. That's all getting into the mix this week as well. So just people kind of readjusting the wins that they've had, the stretched valuations, and what Trump policies might mean. Having said that, there's always the bullish case, which is still seasonality. This time of year for the market tends to do well historically. You've also got company managements buying back their shares. So imagine if you've got somebody buying, that puts upward pressure on a stock price. And then you've also got what's called FOMO. You know, you've got FOMO in all aspects of life, fear of missing out. So interestingly, we've had the biggest inflows into the equity markets in quite some time. So in other words, people are just really moving in, moving money into the equity markets. So all of that kind of taken together is the bull case and why we've, you know, moved so high. So you've got kind of the animal spirits. It's obviously not working today or this week, but those are the bullish reasons for staying in and adding to the market, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. And it's also historically why I've just never looked at it. I mean, now that we're doing this, I am, but never looked at it on a daily basis and just look once in a while and just keep, like what Eden was saying, as long as your story still stands, you don't need to worry about all these little fluctuations. If you just invest in good companies that, you know, you think are good and you want to buy and hold, I don't think there's any reason to, you know, get excited and then get down and get bullish and then get bearish. I mean, I just think it's
right.
Emotional ups and downs.
I would totally agree. And sometimes you just want to make sure that you've got the right trajectory. So in other words, like, has anything actually changed from the big picture case? And I don't think it has. I think that there's a lot of people who still believe that the Trump policies will be very beneficial to the U.S. economy. And you can see that, Melissa, in the U.S. dollar. It has been strong and it's been up 7 weeks straight in a row, to the point where the Canadian dollar hit a low of 140. So, you know, we've got some real issues right now as it relates to the Canadian dollar. And, you know, you can say, depending on who you are, right? You know, some people like the lower dollar, but at the end of the day, if you've got lower purchasing power, all you're doing is buying all these imported goods, you know, with less purchasing power. So to me, a low Canadian dollar is not good at all. It's absolutely reflective of our federal government policies. You know, for 10 years has been, you know, pushing money out of Canada, money that wanted to invest in the energy sector. They kiboshed that. And so, you know, you can't forget that we are actually a commodity currency. Our currency absolutely depends on what our energy sector is doing and is allowed to do, in addition to other aspects that impede Canada's growth. So you've got a pro-growth president coming in and a non-growth prime minister in. So you've got that disparity. And you've also got the U.S. Federal Reserve saying we might hold off on lowering rates. Whereas the Bank of Canada is likely to lower rates once again because there's been so much demand debt that's been building up in the housing sector. I think they're recognizing that this could be a real problem if they don't lower rates. So
Oh yeah,
because
like
of
I think I read
that,
that
yeah.
they're expecting a lot of people to default on their mortgages.
That's right.
And yeah, like I see it. Like I see houses not selling. I see people wanting to get rid of their houses and a lot going on to the market. I think people are feeling like they're paying a lot. And I'm also seeing this big shift in young people, whereas, when I was in my, like a couple of years ago when I was in my 20s, people thought you want to buy a house. A couple of years ago. You want to buy a house and that's how you're going to, make money over time in the value of your home going up. And a lot of young people are feeling now, well, it doesn't make sense to have to take out such a huge mortgage and houses are so expensive. And I think more people are choosing to rent and instead put money into S&P 500, put money into index funds and to grow their wealth that way. Whereas before it was, no, you grow your wealth through your home. So there's this big shift happening, which is actually interesting what you speak to before, like more people being invested in the market than I think there was, young people. And especially with the fact that you can do it now so easily on apps and smartphones, it's almost become, I think there's just so many more players in the market than there was before. So I don't know. It's just something that I was thinking about.
Yeah, no, I think that's very fair. And that, retail investors, can take charge. And that's why we're doing all of this, these kind of conversations that we're having. Take charge of your financial future and quite frankly, your present. So, just as an example, we'll talk about the stocks in a bit, but you can really end up making some money, make money off of your money versus it just sitting there and with calculated risk as well. Like I always say, I'm not a risk taker, but I do believe in calculated risk in every aspect of life, quite frankly.
For
I look
sure.
At everything.
The risk and reward.
The risk and reward. Just real brief too, the TSX is on track to maybe be up by about 0.4%. So nothing major in terms of moves there. Has been helped by energy as well as Shopify, which we'll get to. And then also, I think this is important to note because sometimes you bring up Warren Buffett, like what does Warren Buffett buy? And there's something called 13F filings. So any money manager, anybody who manages money that has over $100 million in assets under management as a registered portfolio manager has to file their holdings. And so the advantage of this is you can see who the most prominent investors are. You can look at who the most prominent investors are and what they hold. What did they buy? What did they add to? And what did they sell? So in terms of us understanding or wanting to know what the smartest people are doing, you can actually take a look at this on a quarterly basis. So you can see what Berkshire Hathaway has been doing. They bought a company called Pool Corp. So because that news came out, that stock is up by 2%. They bought Domino's Pizza. The ticker there is DPZ. They bought about 100. Yeah, they bought $152 million worth of DPZ. That stock's up by about 2%. They sold their Ulta Beauty, not all of it. Mm-hmm. Oh, no, they sold 96% of their position. So it gives you all this information. That stock is down 3% because, again, people are like, wow, what's Warren Buffett doing? Oh, okay. What does he know that I don't know?
Yeah, and he sold a huge amount of Apple and a huge amount of Bank of America.
Correct.
And that's what I find, I think about it. I think it's making people nervous, like, oh my gosh, he's the guru of investing and he seems to be stockpiling cash. Why?
Because I don't know if it's stockpiling.
I think he's got a lot sitting in cash. I mean, I read some stat that he could buy some of the biggest companies in the world four times over with how much cash he's sitting on.
Right. That's
I mean,
fair.
I don't
That's
know you. Fair. I mean, I'm not, I don't know.
No. Well,
so there's
I have
a couple
looked.
Ways to think of it. Like, and as a layperson, as someone, I'm like, okay, either he thinks we're near the top and like, buy low, sell high. So he thinks we're at a high. And so he sells now, which makes sense. It's one way to look at it. And maybe he's waiting for really good opportunities for when, the market comes down a little bit, then he'll go and buy in. Or maybe it's sort of like, if you think of his investments, if you think of the stock market like a big casino, and you know when you've done really
don't
well.
Don't use the word casino.
And you know when you've done really well.
When it comes to investing.
Well, what? I think a lot of people treat it like a casino. I mean, I'm not saying it's gambling, but yeah. A little bit for some people, there are similarities. I'm just saying there are similarities between gambling and investing when people invest poorly, I think. But
well,
all
if they day trade, or if they look at a penny stock and they think they're going to make 10 cents on it, like that.
Yeah, I think a lot of people, you know, and I think it's become a lot more gamified. The fact
true.
That it, I think the fact that it's on your phone, the fact that the you can sit here, you don't have to call anybody, you can buy, sell, people are trying to time the market. I think it's a, you know, it is a bit of gambling for a lot of people, unfortunately. That's when it goes bad. But all I'm saying is, if you think of him being 94 years old, and imagine he's been in the casino, you know, eventually you cash out. Maybe he's just cashing out. I don't know.
No. Okay, because here's the thing as well. Here's the thing. So, you know, you can actually own Berkshire Hathaway.
Yes.
So as opposed to even just looking at the stocks that they own and buying those stocks, you can own what's called Berkshire A shares or B shares. So BRK.A or BRK.B. And BRK.B trades for $469 a share. I think I can't remember, it's in the hundreds of thousands of dollars, right, per share. So you get representation of what he owns within Berkshire by owning BRK.B. And it's done incredibly well. And I actually looked at this when I was 25, you know, entering this industry, the financial industry, and somebody close to me said, oh, why would you buy that? And I didn't buy it, Melissa. And so, you know, one of my big lessons for everybody listening to this is, you know, you still always have to do your own homework, like meaning just think about it. Why did I want to buy in the first place? Why would I be convinced not to buy it? It was a huge, huge miss for me. And anytime I've listened to other people and not myself, it's never been a good move. I hate to say it, but it's actually the truth.
Yeah, I think you take information from other people, but listen to your gut as well. Obviously, you had a reason that you wanted to. It was like me and Tesla, right? At the beginning.
Yeah.
You know, so you want to listen to those instincts and make calculated risks, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I just want to point out as well, because sometimes you ask me, well, what's the right number of shares in your portfolio? And again, you know, if you start just from the beginning, you know, just getting exposure to the market, buy the S&P 500, buy the TSX, but recognize that, you know, as I always say, the TSX is a very different composition versus the S&P 500. I really feel like the S&P 500 represents the broader U.S. economy better than the TSX, because we just don't have a broad economy, right? We don't have a ton of healthcare companies. We don't have a ton of consumer discretionary companies. I mean, maybe it's the wrong way to say it. Yes, it represents the Canadian economy. But with that said, that might not be all the exposure that you want. So in Canada, you might be better off to buy certain sectors if you want a better return over the long time, if that makes sense.
And you could also have, you know, an ETF, you know, with the S&P 500, and also one that represents the TSX, and also one that represents foreign equities. So you have exposure to all.
Yes.
Markets.
So just as an example, I want to just go back. So Berkshire Hathaway Class A shares, one share is $705,000, one share.
Wow.
So that represents all the holdings, all those stocks that they own. That's what one share of BRK.A represents. The return has been 54,000%. I don't have the time frame.
Can you buy fractional shares?
No. Well, I don't think you can.
Because now you seem to be able to buy fractional shares of other stocks.
Yeah. And I'm not so sure about that. I haven't looked into it, Melissa. Like, I'm not sure that I'm a fan of that, because at the end of the day, it's a manufactured product of some sort. So when you have a manufactured product, it's like, okay, when all hell breaks loose, what am I getting? Like, in other words, when everything, you know, if there's a big sell-off in the market or market crash, am I really going to get my fractional share of what it's worth then? Is there going to be liquidation? Am I going to be able to liquidate my position? What fees are involved? Because if it's a structured product, there's often always fees because they're creating it. So you're paying something somewhere, and I'm not sure what I'm getting for it. So I have not looked into it, but that's what I think of.
Another question for you. So let's say when you're starting off investing, do you recommend that people set up a Canadian and a US account, or can they just set up a Canadian account and buy US stocks in their Canadian account?
So you're not allowed to just set up a US brokerage account in Canada unless that US company is allowed to be set up in Canada. So it's called IIROC, and they have to be registered. A US platform has to be registered in Canada for you to be able to use their platform. So the answer is essentially no. An Interactive Brokers, that's a US company, but they do.
No, but
they
are, let's say with TD or whatever, or whatever, I'm going to use their online web trading platform.
Yeah.
I just don't understand. If you open up a US account, would that mean you'd have to put money in the US account and convert it then to buy your US? Like, it's just a bit confusing.
Yeah. So what I've done is, I open up my account. It's Canadian.
Yeah.
And then I have a bank account with US funds, and I put that into my trading platforms or my trading account at the bank. So it's a separate area within my Canadian trading platform.
Okay.
It's the US part portion. So I've got Canadian and US within it. And you just have to be very clear that when you move money into your trading account or trading platform and it's US dollars, that they don't convert it into Canadian, that you're very specific that, yes, I have a US portion of my trading platform. And then you just buy your US stocks that way. Does that make sense? Because you probably, I don't think you have bought, well, no, you do.
I own America. Yeah, I do.
Yeah. So what did you do?
Good question. I just bought them in my Canadian. Like, I just bought, you know, Netflix or whatever.
Okay. And do you think you use Canadian dollars or US? You probably use Canadian dollars.
Canadian dollars.
Okay.
So I think that's probably not ideal.
Right.
But when you look at the Canadian dollar being so weak right now, it's something you think about in buying all these American stocks.
Correct. So you would basically have to make 40% return before you'd even be even.
Right. So it's something that's bothering me right now.
So what you can do is, you know, when you do get American dollars, whatever, you keep that separate and you buy American stocks with that. And you end up buying ETFs, so exchange traded funds by a Canadian, you know, that have been manufactured by a Canadian bank or whatever, ETF provider that will give you, that you can use your Canadian dollars and buy that ETF that represents US companies.
And that's what I've done and how I bought the S&P 500 using
that.
And actually, I was looking recently when we've been talking about AI and wanting to be more invested in AI, right now with how the Canadian dollar is, sort of looking at a Canadian ETF that buys AI, AI focused ETF.
Yeah.
I forget what the name of the, I think it was like CIAI or something.
Get up okay. After.
Anyhow.
I haven't looked at it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's how you would do it. If you have Canadian dollars, that's all these banks have created for years now. So it's proven, you know, it's a fine thing to do is to just buy a Canadian manufactured ETF that represents the US companies.
Yeah.
It's still nice to be able to go direct when you can. So save your US dollars. And, you know, if we ever get this dollar higher.
That's what I'm saying. It's a bit. Yeah. So.
The Canadian dollar, that is.
Hmm.
Yeah. But wait, Melissa, I just wanted to mention, because you asked me this, and I don't know if I said that in Berkshire Hathaway, they own about 50 stocks. Remember, because you've asked me, is the right amount. And, you know, it's just, I don't know that there's a right amount. There's different styles for different people. Some portfolio managers might have 200 stocks, but then think about it. You have to be aware of 200 companies and what their stories are. You know, some believe in a much more concentrated portfolio, which would be like 20 stocks.
So to me, 50 does not sound like a lot.
No, I don't think it's too many.
You know, if you think about, you're 94 years old and you've been picking stocks for You know, imagine you only get to limit yourself to 50.
Poor Warren, you keep bringing up his age.
I think it's amazing. I think it's amazing that he's not the healthiest guy. Like, you know, think of all the soft drinks he drinks and, you know.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan.
You're a big fan. Well, so by the way, he owns about 400. Most people are. Yeah. He owns $400 million worth of Coca-Cola. That's been a big position of his for a long time.
I have to backtrack. I think I heard something that he stayed in the same house for like 50 years or something. And if I was his wife, that would bother me. Okay. Don't get me wrong. I would not want to be married to him.
Right. I'm sure he has a few homes. I've driven by his house. I went to the Berkshire meeting. So by the way, if you own one share of Berkshire Hathaway, so BRK.B for $469, you can go to his annual meeting in Omaha, which I've gone to. It's in a huge stadium.
And would you
stadium.
Want to live in Omaha?
No, but I can go to
you
a meeting.
You would not want to be his wife. No, you would not want to live in Omaha.
I'm sure he travels a few places.
I'm joking. Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, you can go. But Melissa, you can go. You can go to his meeting. It's really quite amazing. They own a lot of private companies as well. So they fill a whole arena with all these like samples of products that they own. It's unbelievable.
Amazing. Well, it's interesting to hear about, you know, his view on cryptocurrency. I mean, obviously that's gone up more than anything. And he's a big, very bearish on that. And does not think that will end well. But who knows, right? I don't know.
And he's also bearish on gold. You know, he's never been a believer in gold. So it's a good lesson right there, Melissa, because at the end of the day, you know, you don't have to be an expert in everything. You don't have to love everything. You don't have to buy everything. It's like going into a store. You don't have to buy everything or want everything. Just pick the things that you really believe in and you can create wealth that way.
Totally. And it's like you said about Coca-Cola. He probably just really likes Coca-Cola and Domino's pizza.
Probably. Okay.
Well, I mean, we'll talk more about stocks later, but this is why, like for me, like Lululemon, you know, I was at my daughter's dance convention on the weekend and there were like 1,000 kids there. And you look around and every single kid there is wearing Lululemon, some form of Lululemon or Aritzia. And I know, you know, you think of it and you're like, oh my gosh, it's everywhere I look is Lululemon. Someone's wearing something Lululemon. Hmm. And I know the stock's actually down. So it's a Canadian one that I actually was giving some thought to as to whether now might be my opportunity to buy some of that stock. But we'll talk
that's a good point. And that's something we can put on our watch list for sure. Hmm. I think what's interesting as well, you're telling me that everybody wears Aritzia.
Oh yeah. Aritzia and Lululemon, all the kids. Hmm. And this Aritzia has this jacket, this super puff. Okay. It's like, I don't know, $300, $400. It's several hundred dollars. And like when the kids decide something's in, it's like everybody has it, you know? And also like their little shorts and their like the little dance wear. They all wear the same bicycle shorts, the same pants. Like kids are very like to be uniform. They like to all have the same thing. They're not looking to be unique. It's like everybody gets the same.
Just FYI, Lululemon is down 36% on a year-to-date basis. Mm-hmm. And we'll look at the stock. It's not difficult to do. And it trades at a 24 times multiple PE. Aritzia has been up 68%. And it trades at a 51 multiple. So
why would it be up and Lululemon? I would love to look through that and figure out.
Okay, we will look.
I think that's just an interesting thing to.
Okay, so we'll do those two stocks for next time because interesting to your point. I mean, I think that there's been some fear that Lululemon's heyday has kind of come and gone a little bit, and there's much more competition. So that might be a play in it, but Aritzia is quite unique in terms of obviously there's competition, but it does have a brand name now that they've really been developing over all these years.
It's become sort of the go-to for work clothes.
Really?
Portable work clothes. Yeah.
Okay.
And I mean, it's good price point and the kids, I think it still does really well with the teens and 20, that sort of like teens. 40. I think that's where Aritzia's sweet spot is. Mm.
Okay. Interesting. Melissa, I just want to mention a couple of other things as it relates to the market. Obviously, we talked a lot about the market ripping higher last week following the Trump election win. Interestingly, he just named RFK Jr., Robert Kennedy Jr., to, well, he nominated him to be the, well, he's an environmental lawyer, but to be the, what is the official title?
I think
He's
it's
going to be
the
focused on health.
Department Head of Health and Human Services.
Thank you. Health and
Yeah.
Human Services Secretary. And interestingly, again, just because we're talking about how stocks are companies that are stories that represent the world. So a number of the pharmaceutical stocks traded lower on this announcement because there's concern that, you know, he's been such a skeptic on vaccines. What will this mean for vaccines and pharmaceutical companies?
Yeah, it's interesting because someone I know who's had a pharmaceutical company on their watch list, it finally went to a level where they felt to buy it. Because sure, this might be a dip in for the next couple of years when Trump is in office, but he's only going to be there for 4 years. And these are companies that you're investing in because you think they make great products and you think they're good companies and you think they have, you know, it's not something you're looking to just trade on in the next year. But I want to talk about if we want to branch
Okay, tell
out,
me.
so we segue into a health topic. So some big
Yes.
things with Robert F. Kennedy Jr. that is this big thing's been in the news about how he has this mandate to or desire to get the fluoride out of the water. And now all
Yeah.
of a sudden people are all focused on fluoride and what does this mean? So I just thought it's an interesting topic that we can discuss, or if you had any questions.
Please, yeah. I'm. What is the problem with fluoride? We were told to have it when we were little. Or is it everywhere in too many places? What's the issue?
So fluoride has been in the water. I think they started it in like the, oh, I don't know, I want to say like the 60s or something. And it was considered a huge public health achievement, majorly, because when the right dose of fluoride was added to the water, it significantly reduced the amount of cavities and dental caries children had. And we don't think about cavities being a big deal anymore, but there's a huge expense associated with it. And now we know that oral health and oral hygiene is also linked to your general health as well. So, you know, we know now that fluoride is really helpful. And actually, the way they discovered this initially is they found that in Colorado Springs, okay, an area where lots of fluoride naturally leached into the water, they were seeing kids having brown teeth, like fluorosis, like too much. And that was actually a bad thing. But then they realized that if you put the right amount of fluoride into the water, it could actually really help decrease the amount of cavities that kids got. So it was great and it was, you know, accepted. Now, in Canada, I think about 45% of Canadian water is has fluoride added to it, and it's determined based on province and municipality. So some provinces say, nope, we don't want to add fluoride to the water, and other provinces say, yes, we do. So Ontario is quite heavily, Ontario and Manitoba have a lot of fluoride in the water, and, you know, BC and Quebec don't. And interestingly, Calgary did an experiment in 2011. They decided, okay, we don't want this fluoride added to our water anymore. So they removed it. And what they saw is a significantly increased amount of cavities and dental costs. And so they decided to put it back. In the US, I think 70% of the US has fluoride added to their water. In Europe, it's much less. So I don't know why he's so focused on this fluoride in the water. It's been there for years. I don't know what his, but I know that he is an environmental lawyer. So maybe he's thinking it from a legal perspective or from an environmental perspective, but not necessarily a health perspective. I don't think that the amount that it's in the water right now, it's something like 0.7 milligrams per liter. At that level, it does more good than harm is what the science certainly says.
Okay. So
Now,
you
the
don't
one thing
eat.
that I think is, yeah, so the one thing that I do think is interesting though is, and certainly if you don't want this, if you use toothpaste that has fluoride added to it, technically, if you're brushing your teeth, You don't really need the fluoride in your water, but it's for lower SES groups that may not have spend the money on the toothpaste. They may not have as good hygiene. They're the ones that actually would benefit the most from it. So really, when you remove the fluoride from the water, that's who you're, it's sort of a health equity thing that that's who it'd be affecting. If you don't drink tap water at all and you just drink bottled water, it's kind of irrelevant because a lot of that wouldn't have added fluoride.
Interesting.
The one thing I did learn though, in looking at this topic a little bit more, is one of the arguments that I kind of understand is that babies, before they have any teeth erupted, they don't need fluoride. So, usually you would think of a mother's milk, breast milk, doesn't have fluoride added to it. Yet when we make formula, if you use powdered formula, and if you add water to it, even if you boil the water, it doesn't remove the fluoride. So theoretically, they're saying, why should we be exposing babies to this fluoride? It's not natural. They wouldn't get it from mother's milk. Okay, so maybe that's an argument. So use bottled water for your formula. Okay, but yeah, anyhow, so it's an interesting, I'd like to understand why he's so why this bothers him so much. And
Well, I'm sure we'll learn more about it. I'm sure, and I think he's talked about it for years. But I just haven't read up on it. But now that it seems like it's going to be coming to fruition, or something's going to happen, we'll see, and we should look at it. He's also, which I love this idea. He's looking to have healthier school meals, which I think is amazing, and also looking at the harmful food colorings, which I brought up the other week, which I think is also really great.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think it's a good thing to look at. In the grand scheme of the big health issues plaguing our nation, do I think that that is top?
Priority.
No. Do I think that it's something that might? I think some of these things are the basis of conspiracy theories, or they appeal to people's own fears, like what is the government putting in my food? What is the government putting in my water that I don't know? What are they injecting me with when they vaccinate me? I think it plays into that. But at the end of the day, like I hope, I'm sure as a very accomplished and smart lawyer, I'm sure there could be good things that come to debate. I don't think that anything will change with vaccines. Vaccines, I can understand, again, when I think about vaccines, I can understand people having a problem with forcing vaccines. I understand people say it's a human right. I should be in control of what goes into my body. And that I can understand. But, the science behind some vaccines is phenomenal. And they're looking at breast cancer vaccines right now. And I'll tell
Oh,
you something.
really?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yes. These, vaccines are,
Wow.
it's genius science. And I think, like a lot of the people that are very skeptical or vaccine hesitant, if you said to them, take this vaccine and you can eat whatever you want and never gain weight, they'd be shooting themselves up like crazy. And if you said, take this vaccine and you won't get wrinkles, okay.
Yeah, I know. I
No,
know.
it's like, I think people look at it like, do I really need it? It's a cold, it's a flu, and I guess like when you look at it on that small scale, the benefit, I think for some people, doesn't seem that great. But if you look at it on a, in a larger scale, then I think, vaccines serve a definite purpose. And I mean, let's even talk about the other, health news this week that I thought caught my attention. I don't know if you saw the articles on the case of the avian flu or bird flu in this teenager in BC.
No.
So it's the first case in Canada of like this domestically acquired bird flu. So, like, what is that, right? So, avian influenza is basically a strain of flu that comes from birds. That's why it's named after them. And usually it's from wild ducks, geese, and it often comes from birds when they migrate over, and these wild birds are carrying this flu. And it often doesn't cause much disease in the actual birds, but when it spreads to It can spread to cattle, it can spread to humans, then it can cause more severe cases. So this boy, and they don't know how he got infected with it, and they may never find out. It might be that he came in contact with a sick bird, a dead bird on the street. It might be that the aerosols from the bird he breathed in It could potentially be from contaminated eggs that he ate, potentially. So anyhow, it caused a severe respiratory illness and he's in severe condition in the hospital. And so when you look at how this happened, when someone gets hospitalized with a respiratory virus, they then will test and try to find out, is this caused by COVID? Is it caused by the flu? Or is it caused by RSV? So we often do a panel looking for what's causing this. So in this individual, it was found that it was influenza. So then they had to look and isolate what strain of influenza is it? And it was very surprising to find out it was this, I think it's, don't quote me on this, but maybe H5N1, I think, the avian influenza strain. And so it was a bit scary because a lot of these farmers now have to find out and they have to report if any of their hens or chickens are infected with it. And if they are, they basically have to get rid of the entire flock. So it made me worried, like, okay, so let's say that these chickens and hens are infected with this avian flu. If I eat eggs and chicken, could I get it? But unless you're eating it raw, no. So cooking will kill that. So that was, I think, reassuring for a lot of people that worry about this. So obviously don't go eating raw eggs and don't go having raw, you know, obviously we know you have to cook your chicken. But also, it also said like you have to be very careful. Like people that work closely with poultry, they're the ones that have to be careful. And they're the ones that would have to use PPE like masks and goggles and gloves when handling it. Or if you come into contact with a dead bird, obviously don't go close. And then your pets, it could also be transferred from a pet. So a lot of time, if you have a dog or a cat and they're out in the back, they might be involved with this bird and that could potentially then transfer. And it's a problem in the US too, in dairy cattle, it's spread to cows. So
it has already?
Yes. So they have a problem with it in the US. And that's why, sorry to segue into this, I'm just thinking these are interesting tidbits. When I was in France recently, we were loving the bread and butter because in France, they don't pasteurize it's non-pasteurized butter. You can't get that in Canada. In Canada, and this is when we talk about the difference between Europe and Canada and North America. Well, here's an example. In North America, you have to get pasteurized milk and cheese, and that pasteurization process would kill that virus. Whereas if you had unpasteurized or raw milk or cheese, you could then be exposed to.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. I like the cheese there better.
100%, right? So it's
worth
delicious.
The risk. It's worth the risk.
The butter is, I know, but maybe the yellow cracker is worth the risk too.
No.
Yes.
Sorry.
Oh, you don't know a goldfish?
No way. No, these colorings, I mean, they're made from oil products. Who wants to be eating oil? Like oil.
Everybody. Oh my God. Oil, that's sludge. One ingredient.
No, not olive oil, oil, like crude oil. A lot of products are made from the remnants of industrial products. That's what I'm saying. I don't want any part of that.
Yeah. I don't disagree. I don't think we would be I think that would be a good thing. I don't think it's adding much to our stuff that we shouldn't eat it.
Yeah.
Remove it. But do I think it's causing, I think it sounds grosser than it probably is. A lot of things come from gross things.
Yes. All right. Well, the one thing.
Recently, they're talking about this new eating feces to change your microbiome. Like, no,
come
thank
on.
You.
I don't know. That's stupid. Let's just call, let's be frank on this show and call it stupid.
Yeah.
Come on. Right. But Melissa, when you were talking about vaccines, I thought you were going to talk about, you know, the one that we keep talking about, which I thought was so interesting. I bought the latest edition of The Economist. Oh, sorry. It was last week's. And on the front cover of The Economist, it's got this syringe. It's the Ozempic one. And then it's got all these like sparkles and ribbons coming out of it. And it's called the Everything Drug, not just for obesity, but addiction, Alzheimer's, and aging. So
and it was fun this week. Fertility.
Fertility. Yeah. Is a new one? Come on.
Yeah.
But by the way, Melissa, this everybody should get this article. There were this economist, because it actually goes through the science as to why, I won't be able to explain it well, but as to why this works and what it does to your cells. So it's worth reading. Yeah. But sorry, so what are you talking about? Fertility is now helping fertility?
Yeah, so they're saying the recent article I saw in Medscape was, you know, is Ozempic the new fertility drug? Because they're seeing a lot of babies being, all of a sudden people go on this drug and boom, they're pregnant. And there's there could be two different explanations. One that people should be aware of, it can make the birth control pill less effective. So if you're on the birth control pill and you're taking this drug, it might not be as effective because it really slows down the rate of digestion and gastric emptying. So you might want to use a backup, you know, if you're on the pill and taking this drug. But also there's a lot of women that have infertility because they're insulin resistant or they have this condition called polycystic ovarian syndrome. So one of the drugs we used to give to people that had this insulin resistance is metformin. That was an older diabetes drug. And we found that metformin used to help people with PCO get pregnant. Ozempic is way more effective, but it's actually interesting because you're supposed to not get one of the contraindications, but a relative contraindication. So in medicine, there's two types. There's an absolute contraindication and a relative contraindication. Absolute means no, relatives like maybe. Okay.
No, what? Maybe what? I don't understand.
An absolute contraindication would be you cannot take this. For example, on Ozempic, if you have a history of something called medullary thyroid cancer, it is an absolute contraindication. You should not give the person semaglutide.
Okay.
If you have gallstones or if you are in childbearing age, we consider that a relative contraindication, meaning it's not a definite no, but it's something you got to talk about and discuss. And it might be a reason not to take it because it could lead to increased risk. But they put it on the table saying, because they don't know yet. This hasn't been studied in pregnant people. And that's why they say, if you're thinking about getting pregnant, you shouldn't take this medication. It's not that they know it's teratogenic or anything like that. It just hasn't been studied. But they're seeing people go on this and all of a sudden they find out they're pregnant.
Well, my understanding of as well as reading this article is it seems to make your cells stronger or less degenerative. And I think that's where the aging aspect comes in. And they explain how and why. I can't explain it, but I'll photocopy.
Yeah, I'd like to look at that. So I don't know what it says in that specific article, but yeah, it's definitely been showing to help. That's why they're thinking it might help with neurodegenerative diseases.
Because it's making you stronger. Yeah, it's amazing.
Fascinating. So anybody that's bearish on the pharmaceutical industry, you know, to me, this is just amazing science. And if you look at 60 Minutes did a piece on the woman who discovered semaglutide.
Oh. And
yeah. So she's in, I forget which European country, but wherever Novo Nordisk is based out of. And she went and she said, please, please, I want to study this more. I think it could be really interesting for diabetes and obesity and based on the mechanism of action.
Mm-hmm.
And at first they said to her like, no, people can just eat less. It's not important. And now blockbuster. Anyhow, it's a really interesting interview if you want to look it up.
Okay. Yeah, I will do that. Why don't we talk a little bit about stocks? And also sometimes you ask me like, you know, how do you know when to sell and again, this is, you know, it's very personal and it's personal because it's how you like to invest, right? Like there's a lot of different types of money manager styles. Okay. So we've taught some people like to buy value stocks. So that means the valuation is probably lower than what it is historically. Yet the company fundamentals are still good, right? So that'd be a value stock. Now where it's a value trap is where the price of the stock, you know, is lower than it normally has been. And you're expecting the company fundamentals to turn around, company fundamentals being like their profit, their outlook, their products, their company management. You're thinking the company management is going to do a better job. And that doesn't happen. And then that's called a value trap. But anyway, there's value investing and then there's growth investing. So really looking at companies that are on a nice growth trajectory. And then there's lots of types of investing. There's also event-driven investing. So you're waiting for a specific event to happen. So sometimes depending on why you bought that company will dictate why and when you want to sell. So in other words, if you're a value investor and you buy a stock and you're right, the stock price moves higher and higher and higher, and then it gets to a valuation that you say, no, 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 this doesn't make sense, then your discipline would tell you that you need to sell it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's just a little bit about different styles. So if we look at Tesla, so when we started this podcast, I bought Tesla and so it is settled. So when you buy a stock, it's trade day plus 3, I think it is now. Back in the day, it was trade day plus 5. So to settle the stock, so you own it, gets put in your account, you have to, you know, you're paying for it, and you specifically own it at a certain date. So I own this Tesla stock on October the 10th at $251. A couple of weeks later, it went up to $345. So I was up 37% in basically 4 weeks, when the market was up by maybe 4%. So this goes back to, you know, owning a stock or a company's specific story versus owning the market. Now, if the stock had done poorly, it probably would have done a lot worse than the market too. Okay, because there's more risk. There's company specific risk in just owning one stock versus the market. All of that risk gets broadened out. So some are going to be up, some are going to be down. So you probably won't make as much money, but you probably won't lose as much money. Mm-hmm. Okay, but since then, Tesla's stock has gone down, and so it's down to about 319. So now I'm up 27%. So, you know, I could say, why didn't I sell it when I was up 37, like in 4 weeks, that's a lot of money. Maybe I should have, but my longer term view is positive. And if anything, I was kicking myself that I hadn't bought more. So what I should be doing now that it's down is to buy more.
Yeah.
So that's just a little bit of the way.
And this is why when you get mad at me and I compare it to a casino, it's like, you're at the craps table, you're up, do you cash out and leave? But you know what I mean? So I've never been that kind of because it's not my field, right? I'm more of a buy and hold and not looking to, you know, make little wins here and there. That being said, I understand that too. And there's nothing wrong with that element on top of your proper, like on top of your long-term investing plan.
Right. Know? Yeah. And some people, are hedge funds that if they were up 37%, and by the way, they would have levered that position. So meaning if they had $100,000 to manage and to buy Tesla with, they maybe would have leveraged that up 5 times or 10 times. So they would have been playing with $1 million. So if they put $1 million to work and were up 37%, they definitely would take money off the table. But that's not being casino. That's just saying, hey, this is a huge move
money off the table
in a very short amount of time. I'm going to be smart. I'm going to take this and lock it in for the year.
Yeah.
Not a bad way to do it. It's not a bad way. But interestingly, I just wanted to go back because if you recall, one of the reasons I said last week that, you know, the stock had been rallying, Tesla had been rallying, was because there was a view that President Trump is going to remove that EV tax credit of $7,500, which would, you know, put pressure on the other EV manufacturers that don't have nearly the same scale and breadth and advancement that Tesla has had. So if anything, it's going to put pressure on the other companies and not Tesla, even though Tesla might be a bit affected, but they're so far ahead of all these other companies. So I think that's why Tesla's stock was down a little bit over the past week. But interestingly, there have been media reports that this is what is going to happen, that there will be a removal of these tax credits.
I was just thinking about the I think about this a lot, like Tesla and Uber and the future and trying to predict the future. I mean, you can never just try to make educated guesses about what the future could look like. And example, the other day I was going out for dinner with some girlfriends and I knew we'd have a couple glasses of wine. So I didn't want to drive.
Mm-hmm.
So I was thinking, called an Uber and I went there, but I was thinking in the future when they have this self-driving potential, I would probably drive my Tesla to the restaurant and then just send it home. And then when I was ready to leave, I would call my own car to come pick me up and go home. So it made me think about ownership versus rental and houses, like comparing it to it. So I think there'll be some people that own their own EV and they use it as their own personal taxi, calling it from themselves. They go to work and instead of having to pay for parking anymore, they just send it home. Mm-hmm. But there'll be some people that don't own their own car, they're going to have to rely on always calling a robo-taxi. But like for me, when I've used the self-driving, now maybe it will get to a point that the AI is so good that it will be a better driver than humans. And when I say better, I don't mean safer and less accidents. I mean actually like a more enjoyable ride. Because if I was going to call, like we're all backseat drivers, right? When you get in the car and someone else drives you, aren't you always annoyed? Like, why are you in this lane? You know, why are you stopping so long? Why are you going? So when I get picked up, especially
annoyed.
Yeah, especially if you call an Uber X, okay, like versus an Uber Black. Like I'm very, my friends make fun of me, but I call Uber X because I don't like to spend the extra money on the fancy Uber. But sometimes when I'm going the Uber X, I'll be like, why are you going that way? Like we're supposed to be going south, but their Waze is telling them to go north and then turn around. And I can just imagine if I was in a robo-taxi, a self-driving car, it would be so annoying to me to be sitting in the car and watching it go the wrong way or go slow if I knew the right way, right? So I think I still want to be in control.
Yeah.
And then just send it home. So use the car. Anyhow, I was just sort of thinking about how.
So what does this mean? Are you buying Tesla? Are you buying Uber or nothing? You're waiting.
Both.
You're going to buy both.
I think both are great companies with a place in the, And I actually think they're going to be working together in some way. Like Tesla might rely on Uber's, the way it's app and the way it manages things. And I also think with Uber Eats, you'll still need a person to pick up the food and pick up the stuff. And this Uber Eats, these kids use Uber Eats, you know, and that's also an interesting tangent. So if Warren Buffett thinks that everybody's going broke and the economy.
What do you mean? Why is he thinking that? So I don't think that's what you should read into his selling, because he still owns all these other companies.
Okay, other companies, but if he thinks that we're on the brink of a reset, let's just say he thinks the economy's we're not going to have a lot of money.
We're going to have to call him.
Uber Eats is so expensive, but you know what's so much cheaper to order is Domino's. Like if you order pizza via Uber Eats versus ordering on the Domino's app directly, you will save so much money just ordering directly from Domino's than Uber Eats.
Okay, so why don't we
do this? Aside. That's a 10.
Okay. No, but you've been thinking about it. So why don't we do this for next time? Why don't we look at, before you buy it, I think we should do some fundamental homework on Uber.
Okay.
So we'll look at Uber. We know the Tesla story. We'll look at Lululemon and Aritzia. Okay. And let's look at Domino's Pizza. Let's do some fundamental research. He just bought a huge position in Domino's. Let's look at why he would be doing that. He also bought the pool. I don't know that company. What's that? We can look at it. Let's just look at Domino's. We'll stick with Domino's. The other thing that I think is kind of interesting is, I didn't talk about this yet, but the CPI numbers came out this week for the United States, the inflation reading, and it was in line with expectations. But we did see that air travel prices were up 3.2% month over month. So when you sit there and you're trying to make plans and you're going like, look at these prices, they're crazy. Well, you're not wrong. So I'm just wondering if an airline, and I've never bought an airline in my life, but I'm, because they're very volatile, they're very cyclical. I'm just wondering if that might be worth a look as well.
Interesting. I like that.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So we've got a couple there to look at.
And I also I like Meta, to buy more Meta right now. So first of all, I think that they just added a charge on Instagram. If you have a business Instagram account, all of a sudden now they want you to pay to get better exposure. I think a lot of influencers and a lot of people that have business accounts are going to feel like they need to pay a little bit or their videos aren't going to be seen. And I think that's going to increase revenues. Wow. I don't know, but I just saw that. Sure. And I was like,
Okay. I'm sure that makes sense. They're going to pay for sure. I don't know. What do you remember what the charge is? It's probably minimal.
It's like, it wasn't that minimal. I think it was like, I don't know. It was $18 a month.
That's or $18
a year. $18 is a month is a lot. Anyhow, I paid
it. You paid it. Okay. All right. We'll look at that. Now, Melissa, I just also want to mention too, you know, we talk a lot where, you know, hopefully people are following the story, learning a little bit more about the economy, how things are connected, and the fact that all stocks are, all investing is, you know, you get to kind of have a, you know, learn more about the world, how things are connected, and be a participant in it, really, when you analyze and think about this stuff. I think it makes life more interesting. And you can have your money make you money. And, you know, I think you've been definitely making money over the past month that we've been doing this. So have I. And how do you get started? Just to reiterate, just go get an online account. And by an online platform, somebody who I know, their daughter opened up a Questrade account the other day. I was on the phone with her. It took her like 10 minutes. And then she was able to transfer money right in, no waiting, no nothing. So, and by the way, then people say, well, how do I get information on all of these platforms now? We talked about this in the first or second episode, but they all have things you can read about. How do you get started? You know, a little bit synopsis of what's going on in the market. So you can actually just start with whatever platform you use. It's just a good starting point. And just put $1,000 into your account. Put $500 in and buy something. And then you're in the game. You're in the game. You got to get in the game. It's fun. So great.
Totally. I couldn't agree more. I think when you really understand the power of compounding and you really understand what that means when your money is making you money, like what you're like, you can go to work every day and make money, but you can have this passively, your money sitting there and actually making a return and seeing the amount. If you look over 10 years, oh my gosh, like I didn't do anything for that. It was just there and it went up, you know? When people see that for themselves and experience it, they understand. You don't understand something until you do it yourself, is my things. Yeah.
And so let me ask you this though, Melissa, because some people say, oh, I just give it to a broker and I don't know what they do. And, you know, nothing's blown up, so I'm good. I'm like, but are you good? Just because nothing's blown up, I don't know if you're good, especially if you can be better. But so my question to you is, what made you do it other than, you know, you had your exposure through your dad, but what would you say to people?
I'll tell you what made me do it. So when I became a physician and I started making money, I didn't know what I was supposed to do. And so through the Canadian Medical Association or whatever, it was the OMA or the CMA, they had a deal with this company called MD Management. And they said, okay, the doctors go here and you meet with somebody at MD Management or MD Private Investment Council, and which is essentially a mutual, which is essentially they take your money and they say, okay, we're only going to charge you this much interest. But then what I found out, so I just kind of gave it to them and didn't pay attention. And also then as a doctor, you start getting people competing for your investment. You get invited to these dinners. Oh, we can manage your money. And you have all these people that see you as a good way to make them money.
Right.
Okay.
Because they get fees. Yes.
Because they get fees. Now, I don't want to be negative on any company. And maybe, you know, they actually got bought by Scotia. But I looked at my return. All of a sudden, a couple of years, I started looking and I was like, why have I only made that? When I looked at the market and what it was up, and I'm like, the market's up this much. Why have I only made that? And all of a sudden, I was like, I'm done. I'm leaving. And then they only invested in their mutual, like anyhow. So I took all my money out. And so I decided just to open up my own account. And I had some people in my life that were, knew what they were doing investing wise. So I felt like they could help guide me.
Great. And
I just started having conversations. And that's how I started. And that's how it happened. But again, yeah, I think a lot of people, they just trust their, you know, and when I look at this and as like compare it to medicine, you know, the old ways people used to just trust their doctor with their health.
Right.
Too. Now people start to, you have to advocate for your own health. You can't just sit there as a passive recipient of anything, or you're not going to, you know, you have to understand anyhow, and just have good people around you. Like you've already said, like you can't be an expert in anything, but if you surround yourself with good people and you want to learn, then I think, you know, you can get more savvy.
Getting savvy. And by the way, too, like, you know, I believe in advisors, you know, I work with some for sure. But I've also always, you know, done it on my own as well. So I think to have a nice mix is a good way to do it. And I think that if people have their money with an advisor but don't know anything about it, just start get involved and put some money to work. And then, you know, you'll be smarter when you do meet with your advisor. You'll be wondering, well, why did you do this and
That
you
was
didn't
the
do
other thing
that?
too. When I would meet with them, they would give me this huge, like 30-page report. And I have gone to medical school. I've interpret blood work and lab. I could not for the life of me understand this report. And I'm like, if I can't understand this, it's because I'm not supposed to understand it.
Right.
Okay.
That is true. That is
Well,
true.
things should be able to be explained to you.
Yeah. Absolution. Yeah. I always say, give me the one liner. You know, if you can't give it to me in one line, two lines, probably not very good.
And probably, what are you pulling over on me? Or I don't know. And it could also just been my experience, and everybody has a different experience, but I'm just giving you a little bit of background.
I wanted to know why. So wait, Melissa, do you have anything more to go in health today? Because I have one quote that I'm curious. I want to read to everybody, which I thought was hysterical.
I think that's enough health topics.
Okay. So, and next week, I do want to talk about Eurospot. I've gotten some friends who are asking me about that. That's that chair, that seat thing that you sit on that makes your, I don't know, your urinary area stronger. Have you not heard of this? You know what I'm talking about.
I've heard of something called Emcella.
Don't
know. So it basically looks like a toilet seat that you sit on. And it's for strengthening pelvic floor. So it's the same thing as a bit of M-Sculpt, the electrodes that go on your abs and they contract your muscles. So this is like that. It's called M-Cella. So maybe the one you're talking about is the same thing, but a different brand.
Yeah.
So
it's. I think,
what,
it's
a, what
is, I think, well, I think it's called Eurospot, but I'll send it to
Eurospot.
You.
Okay.
I want to look at that.
But what is it? Are you looking at the dock or the actual device?
Oh, no, it's a place you go to do this.
Oh, so it's a clinic? That you
I think
go?
So. I
oh,
think
so
so.
That's what it is. So it would be just the area, and they would have different. So it's sort of what I trained in today. They would have different modalities because this is a growing area, right? Of women in menopause or perimenopause, menopause that have these issues. They want to have strong pelvic floor muscles because of these Euro, like they're getting incontinence, they cough, they like if they jump on a trampoline, they leave.
Yeah.
If they sneeze, they leave.
But also for when you're older, like, you know, when you're 70 or 80, to not have those problems that are apparently quite prevalent, right?
Yeah, well, then a big thing also we know now is also thinking about your hormones. So a lot of thinking about if you don't want to take systemic menopausal hormone replacement therapy, then there's a lot of evidence showing you at least should be using vaginal estrogen. Because when that area is not exposed to estrogen, you can get something called genitourinary syndrome of menopause. And that results in lots of bladder infections, pain with intercourse, urge incontinence, stress incontinence, all these things that people suffer with silence. And now, we're becoming a lot more knowledgeable about it. Interestingly, in Europe, one other thing is vaginal estrogen, I don't know if it's all over Europe or just in the UK or whatever, is just over the counter. Here you need a prescription.
It should be more prevalent, easier to get. Let's look into that next time. And then I do have friends also who want to look into like stem cells. That's a bigger topic, and we're going to bring some experts on as well, so we can always look at some experts in these specific areas.
Sure.
But lastly, Melissa, so I don't know if everybody saw this as well. I think it's kind of interesting, but I'm sure you know that Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy are going to be the leaders in this government efficiency program in the United States to decrease the amount of bureaucracy in the U.S. government. And they put on X, looking for people to work for them. They want people who don't need They don't need part-time generators. They need super high IQ, small government revolutionaries willing to work 80 plus hours a week in an unglamorous cost-cutting area. And they'll review the top 1%. So
who wants
applicants?
This is the worst job.
I don't know. I think it's going to be, I think there's, I mean, why
it
not
might
be clear?
They might find good people.
You know what?
Sociopaths.
Why not? No, Melissa, why not be so clear that, you know what? We don't want people sitting at home. This is not a part-time job. I think it's pretty brilliant. Like, let's get to work here. I like it.
Yeah, I mean, they're being, I think, should definitely be straightforward in what you're looking for.
Yeah.
I mean, hope they don't have a labor union or something.
No, they definitely won't. That's counter.
No.
Anyway, yeah. Okay, I think we're good to wrap it up
Yeah,
here.
that's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got the fight
Okay.
tonight. I'm so excited to
Oh
see what
yeah.
happens and to hear about it.
Yeah, going to the fight. I'm gonna get a little bit dressed up, a little bit glammed up. I don't know. You know, I think
Yeah.
so. We're in Dallas. Why not?
Totally. Okay,
Yeah.
send me a picture. Post a
Okay, I'll
picture.
send pictures from there.
Okay, sounds good.
Okay,
Have
wrapping it up.
fun.
Talk to you
Okay,
later.
bye.
Thanks. Bye.